still on to the services of Freedom Radio 99.5 FM. Professor Abdullah Uba Adamu from the Department of Education, BUK, has arrived for an interview with Kabir Muja Musa Jumaji in the program Creative Writing. Stay tuned.
Good morning, great audience. This is Creative Writing, your favorite program. It's brought to you by OA, courtesy of Freedom Radio. I'm Kabir Musa Jumaji. Our special guest on the program today, as it's been announced, is Professor Abdullah Uba Adamu, a powerful literary figure. The Kano-born Professor Abdullah Uba Adamu is a mighty scholar in the Department of Education, Bari University, Kano. He's a researcher and a cultural anthropologist. Welcome to Freedom Radio, Professor.
Assalamu alaikum.
Thank you very much, Samir Asad. So, without delay, I said in the introduction that you are a cultural anthropologist. So, what roles do cultural anthropologists play in a particular society?
Well, cultural anthropologists are cultural mediators. They try to understand how people live their lives in relation to their individual cultures. Cultural anthropology is different from sociology, where sociology looks at social norms and values. In cultural anthropology, you look at how people live their lives according to their own traditional patterns of existence. And that is why it is culture and anthropology together. And it is a part of anthropology that has been hacked out of main anthropology. Main anthropology itself is divided into so many divisions. There is political, economic, social, and cultural. I choose to specialize in cultural anthropology because I think that a lot of things about Hausa people have been misrepresented by a lot of people, and I think it is time to represent what our people are.
Yeah. Sir, you were in the United States, I think, last November?
That's right.
So, what did you do there?
I was invited to Barnard College, Columbia University. Barnard College is a woman college, and they are very interested in one of my researches, which I call Transnational Express. The idea behind Transnational Express is to look at how media and imagery move from another part of the world to another part of the world and how it was recreated and reinterpreted. I was particularly interested in how House of Home video movies became a reenaction or a reproduction of house, Indian films. And the whole idea of moving images from India or from Southeast Asia to Africa and then reinterpreted or readapted or remade as adapted local entertainment is something that gathers a lot of interest from many people in the world because they want to know how media circulates and when it circulates from one point to another, how it is reinterpreted and the kind of messages that go through the reinterpreted process. And this is called intermediality, you know, the way in which you pick up one media, take it to another media, and you want to see whether the messages remain the same or whether they change. That is what I did at Barnard College. I gave a lecture on how intermediality happens, and then from intermediality to intertextuality, because it's not just a question of the media that moves from one part of the world to another, but also a question of the messages that move from one part of the world to another. After I finished with the Columbia University, then I moved to Illinois, University of Illinois at Urbana Campaign, where I participated in an African film conference in which I presented also a paper there on Sharia and censorship, the relationship between Sharia in a Muslim society and the way films are censored. And again, that was a well-accepted paper. In fact, they are going to publish it in a book of proceedings, which will be coming out toward the end of this year, 2008. So these are the two things that took me to the U.S., or took me back, because I have lived in the U.S. before, in 1990 to 1991, as a Fulbright scholar.
So, sir, in brief, how rewarding the conference was?
Oh, they were both excellent. Excellent, because it gives you an opportunity to share your ideas with other people, to get a critical feedback on what you do. Most of the time when people look at what I write, they keep saying, oh, this is good, this is fantastic, this is great. But you will wish somebody to look at you and say, no, this is not fantastic. You have made an error here, you have made a mistake there, and so on. And that conference was an avenue for people to be able to say, yes, this is a very good idea, but don't you think you could have approached it in this way or something like that? And I thought that was very, very good. And it was extremely rewarding, because I met a lot of people there, people that are well-known, like Ralph Austin, like Jose Moya. I mean, these are people who are really well-known in the area of media and cultural anthropology. And I also became part of a network that will study a program called Nollywood Project. Nollywood Project was supposed to be based in Southern Illinois University, Carbondale. And the idea behind the project is to look at Nollywood as a film force in Africa. And there were even moves to say that when you say Nollywood, you mean African film. I said, no. Nollywood is Southern Nigerian film. There is a Northern Nigerian film culture called Kaniwood. And this Northern Nigerian film culture goes all the way to Niger Republic, Burkina Faso, Senegal, Ghana, wherever you see Hausa diaspora and Hausa people living. So you cannot just simply ignore it. And based on this argument, the Nollywood Project decided to include Kaniwood as part of his scheme.
Sir, in contemporary world, is it necessary for a society to represent or expose its values and identity through, say, drama or movies?
Well, drama, movies, music, literature, they're all part of literature. Basically, they are literature and they are representative. Every literature is representative. It's a mirror. That is why the Arabic word for literature, adabi, means a mirror, the way people live their lives. So it is necessary. People have to represent their lives and the way they see them. And whatever you see in the United States of America is a reflection and representation of American values, a fundamental value of America. I mean, maybe people don't go around with guns and shooting everybody, but the fact is there is a fundamental ethos behind whatever you see. So it is a representative concept, whether it is literature, whether it is film, whether it is music. It is making a statement about a group of people and saying, look, here we are, this is what we are.
So I'd like you to briefly bring us up to date with the historical background of Hausa film industry in Kano.
Well, the Hausa film industry in Kano started in 1990 with a film called Turumandenya, which was produced by a drama group that was led by people like Awelu Marshall and Ibrahim Bandoli. But the name of the production company was Tumbingiwa. It was an excellent film, really, really excellent, because it was the first time an attempt was made to pull out audience from the television to a larger screen. Well, much larger screen that you see in the cinema. It was not a cinema film, it was a video film. But it was not meant to be seen at home, it was meant to be seen in the cinema. 1990, that was the year, the landmark year in which you could say this is the first Hausa film. It was directed by Salis Galadanci, and like I said, it was an excellent film. And ironically enough, what people might be surprised is the fact that films like that do have singing and dancing. Mm-hmm. But the singing and dancing was the traditional Gada kind of singing and dancing. It is not the modern singing and dancing that has populated the films. From 1990 to about almost 1999, the films that were produced at that time tend to be representative. They tend to be literature films. They tend to be an attempt to understand the world. They tend to be an extension of the very, very popular dramas. There were popular dramas like Nanghaiki, Namaguri, and so on. So famous Hausa films from 1990 to about 1999 tend to be more or less extended versions of those dramas. And that's where they were accepted. People like them, people love them. From 1999, particularly from October 1999, when Sangaya was released, the entire industry altered its focus because Sangaya proved so many things. It proved that singing and dancing between boys and girls is something that can be done and is something that can be popular. Sangaya was the most popular house of video film ever made, and that provided a template for almost every wannabe director, producer, to say, I want to make a film like Sangaya. And then from 2000 to about 2004, the market was ablunge, was awash with all sort of films that attempt to create the Sangaya formula, so that singing and dancing became at the forefront. Between 1990 to 1999, there was a focus on the stories. Even the titles of the film tell you something about the stories, about what they are trying to say. But after 1999, the titles become a little bit crazy, and the singing and dancing just simply took over. And when people say Hausa video films are all about singing and dancing, I think they are a little bit unfair, because there were films before 1999 that were not about singing and dancing. Films that are very good, that deal with normal, ordinary life of Hausa people, films that are representative, that can be taken to any part of the world and shown with pride as a representation of Hausa people and behavior. But because the commercial films, that is the post-1999 film, the commercial films are so much in the forefront of critical debate, people tend to look at them and say, this is how Hausa films are. But it's not true, because there are many, many Hausa filmmakers who are really excellent. They know what to do. They have the grasp of the movie film industry, and they are just amazing. But they are not given the chance because of the commercial power and success of the film that came after 1999.
Sir, in the early days of these Hausa films, sir, I think you rendered your involvement in it, but later it seemed that you chickened out of it. What was amiss?
Well, I don't know if the word chicken out is the proper word, because when you say chicken out, you mean you got scared. Researchers rarely stay in one place. It is dangerous. So researchers rarely stay in one place. Researchers always keeps moving. I started research sometimes in about 2002. And I was motivated to start the research by my little son. He was just about 4 years old at that time. And he kept insisting that I have to get him a tape of something called Sangaya. And I don't even know what Sangaya was. So it is in the process of trying to find out what Sangaya was that I discovered it was a film. But more than a film, it was also a song. And I was fascinated by the fact that a four-year-old child was very, very interested in it. So I started studying it. And that is what led to a book, which I have just completed, called Passage from India. And it is being considered for publication by Ohio University Press in the United States. I finished the book in 2006. In fact, I finished it in September 2006 while I was staying in London. And I said, that is it. I have done all that I could as far as the Hausa video film industry is concerned. I've been to Kenya, I've been to Dakar, I've been to the UK, presenting bits and pieces of my research findings and getting critical feedback. And all the critical feedback that I got enabled me to make the book a little bit stronger. So that is it. I'm no longer interested. So I shifted my focus to music, particularly rap music, the way in which rap music becomes another form of intertextuality and intermediality, the way American hip-hop and rap is now retranslated into Hausa music by very, very few, musicians like Kano Riders, K-Boys, Billy O, and sometimes a little bit of Shaba, Mind No Mistake. These are the ones that you can call hardcore rap artists who are really doing something on a long intermediate level. And I was very interested in that intermediality, because I know the history of rap. I know the history of hip-hop. And I want to see how the history of rap and hip-hop reproduce itself here in Kano. And whether the pattern used by mainstream hip-hop musicians like Tupac Shakur, Eminem, and so on, is represented here in this society in an intermediate or intertextual form. So I didn't chicken out of studying Hausa video films. I felt I have done enough, and it is now high time for other people to continue that level. And I was always ready to render my assistance to anybody who wants to pick up an aspect of it and study it. But a researcher rarely stays in one place.
Yeah, so you're just a researcher, not a participant.
No, I'm not a participant at all. I'm not really interested in the industry. Even though I was motivated to establish a company called Visually Ethnographic. Now, the idea behind Visually Ethnographic is to do documentary films about Hausa society and culture, documentary films that are not commercial, that are not to be sold, but to be given away free on the internet so that people will be able to see what our people are. And it is a reaction to the commercial nature of the Hausa video film. That we say this is a counter-reaction. People keep saying, well, this is what we're trying to do.
Listeners, we've been talking to Professor Abdullah Ubah Adam, a researcher and a cultural anthropologist. Sir, what was your reaction when Kano State Censorship Board had announced the continuation of filmmaking?
Well, they have banned it for about 6 months, and within these 6 months, a lot of the filmmakers tend to feel that their entire business has been stopped. So lifting the ban is good, because now it enables them to continue their activities. But one thing that I think I should draw attention to is that there is no country that does not regulate any aspect of its industry. The regulation is common. Whatever we do, we are regulated. So the whole idea of regulation of the film industry is in line with what happens internationally. Even in the U.S., they do regulate the films, but it may be in a different way. Parents have a greater involvement in what children see in the U.S. than here. But the lifting of the ban, I think, is a very good, welcome move, and it will give them an opportunity to continue their jobs.
So most of the restrictions imposed on the filmmakers were inspired by Islamic doctrines rather than Hausa popular culture. So, sir, does this mean that the popular culture is also on trial?
It is not, because when you talk about a Muslim Hausa, you are referring to a person who has no other life and other worldview but Islam. So whatever you see under the name of Islam is something that a Muslim is expected to do. You as a Muslim have this obligation to make sure that you propagate Islam in any way that you can. When you're talking about Hausa popular culture, you are referring probably to non-Islamic Hausa popular culture. And I very much doubt if that non-Islamic Hausa popular culture has a niche in the contemporary discourse, because whatever you do that is related to non-Muslim Hausa is seen as maguzanchi, and people just simply do not accept it. So whatever we do as Muslims, we do it within a framework, and that framework is Islam. And I don't think that whatever regulations that are given are necessarily Islamic as such. They don't happen to be sociological, and the Hausa sociology is Islamic sociology. So if you say Islamic, you are introducing a sort of ideological perspective into it and saying, well, there is a time when you will not be Islamic and there will be a time when you will be Islamic. No, I think it is just simply Hausa Islamic sociology. Muslims are expected to live their lives according to Islamic tenets, and therefore whatever regulation you give is within the sociology of Islam.
So what you are saying in crude terms, Islam and Hausa culture are identical?
They are more than identical. They are the same.
They're the same.
They're the same. Because when the Hausa person accepted Islam, he just simply abandoned all the other aspects of his life. That's just it. Islam is not a question of picking up a bit of it and then living up. It's a total way of life. You either take it all or you leave it. But it's a total way of life. So there is no room for you to say, okay, I will be 98% Muslim and 2% Bamaguti. No. You are either 100% Muslim or you are 100% Bamaguti. But there is no room for any other worldview except Islam if you accept Islam.
But sir, in Hausa there is this tradition of Gada, Rawa, and what have you.
Yeah.
Are they acceptable in Islam?
They don't clash with Islam. There is a difference between something that is accepted in Islam and something that clashes with Islam. They don't clash with Islam. When Islam came in about 1380 to Kano, for instance, it meant a lot of things, okay? And some of these things were in line with what the Islamic world expected anyway, what the Islamic principle expected, so it ignores it. It doesn't necessarily have to be the same. You have to distinguish between Arabic customs and Islamic customs, okay? Because the Arabs also have their own customs that are not necessarily Islamic, so they abandon them.
So one of the conditions imposed on the film industry is that, states that it's prohibited to produce a film with songs and dances. So how could you assess the marketability of a film which is devoid of songs and dances?
Well, I was there at the press conference when the DG made this announcement. He said, singing and dancing as we know them in House of Films are gone. They are gone forever. That's what he said. But he said that if there is something that is traditional singing and dancing, that might be allowed if it is decent. So there is a qualifier to that.
Mm.
But going back to your original perspective of the marketability of a House of Film without singing and dancing, it will not sell. And the reason it will not sell is because people who put singing and dancing in their films do so because they don't have the talent to create a powerful story. People who buy or who prefer films with singing and dancing do so because they are not interested in a powerful story. So you have this scratch-itch syndrome where people produce them because people want it. Between 1990 to 1999, there were powerful films that were made that have no singing and dancing because they had powerful storylines. So the whole idea of making people accept films without singing and dancing is saying, we do not have any powerful storyline. We don't know how to tell a very good story. And therefore, the only way to hide our inability to tell a very good story is to populate the film with a lot of singing and dancing, especially Indian copied singing and dancing, especially boys and girls wearing tight jeans and so on. They are just strategies, ways of masking inefficiency and inability to tell a very powerful story. But there are filmmakers that are absolutely powerful. I have seen about 3 or 4 films that I think are absolutely fantastic, and these films have powerful storylines. So if we can bring them to the forefront and show people that a powerful storyline is more important than singing and dancing, we can change the market.
Okay. So now you are preaching the race in quality of the stories.
That's right. Creating more powerful storylines. Storylines that make you stand up and think. Storylines that make you feel that, yes, this filmmaker is talking about your life. He's talking about something that you know. It's something about something that you can understand, something you can relate to. Now, there are very, very few filmmakers who are good enough to come up with that kind of strategy. The rest of them just decide to just simply pick up an Indian film and copy that Indian film, and then that's just it. They don't see it as an art form, but just a commercial form.
But don't you think that if they are kept under absolute control, then they may go to neighboring states and produce films that will still impact on the people of Kano?
Sure, why not? It's a free market. I mean, nobody prevents them from going to Zamfara or Kaduna and doing whatever they want to do. But I can tell you this, it will last. It will last because the market is in Kano. Whether you like it or not, Kano is the market. Kano is the center. People have to come here to sell it. The purchasing power of just one area in Kano alone is just more than the purchasing power of an entire state. And also, don't forget that other people, the other places where they might go to do these things are also full of Muslims, and they can also react to what they are doing. So it is not like they are running away from Kano because Kano hate them. And remember, they are running away not because they are being prosecuted, but because Kano State is saying, let us be Islamic. So what they are saying in a sense is that I don't want to be Islamic. I want to be as kufur as possible. So let me go to the neighboring state and be as kufur. And do you think Allah will allow you to go and do some kufur in another place and bring it to an Islamic area to pollute that? No way. It's not going to happen. So I'm not worried about them going anywhere. I mean, Kano is not going to lose any revenue at all. After all, for the last 6 months, the industry has been standing still. Kano has not lost anything. We haven't seen any catastrophe that has happened to Kano. So even if the entire film industry is stopped, I very much doubt if there will be a big catastrophe. Now, stop people from selling pure water, and there will be a catastrophe. Just the pure water that you see at the junction. Stop them. Say there is a regulation that bans people from pure water. That would be a big problem. But film is just a leisure.
So Sambene Usman, a Senegalese writer, died last year. What lessons do you think aspiring writers in Africa should draw from his life and works?
The fact that Sambene Usman was a brilliant writer means that he created moving imagery as well as words that reflect life in Senegal. Mm-hmm. I have seen some of his films and I've read some of his books. And the lesson drawn is that Sambene Usman was a representative fiction writer. He wrote with emotion, with feeling. And he is narrating a story about his people. His narrative style tells you what he wants you to see about his life and his people. Not some imagery fantasy, but the reality.
Mm-hmm.
He was a realist looking at the reality of life in Senegal, particularly among Muslims in Senegal. And later on, he shifted, became a filmmaker. And his films have remained one of the most critically acclaimed films in West Africa. I think it was a loss to the literary world.
Finally, do you have anything to reiterate? We're running out of time.
Well, I just wish everybody the best of luck in everything that they do, and I wish more and more people will study cultural anthropology. Thank you very much.
Thank you very much. That has been Professor Abdullah Oba Adamu from the Department of Education, Bayero University, Kano, a cultural anthropologist. Listener, we must stop at this point. We hope you enjoyed the interview. Thank you very much, Professor Abdullah Oba Adamu, for sparing time to come. Listener, Dr. Umar Farouk Jibril, HOD Mass Communication, Bayero University, Kano, is going to be our guest on the program next week. Now, on behalf of our guest, Professor Abdullah Oba Adamu, my colleague Abdusalam Sani, the producer of the program, Zakari Yusuf, the duty host, Samira Saad, I'm Kabir Musa Jamaji. Thank you.